Hi, you're listening to the Petri.com MJF chat show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I am here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF chat is going to be all about the concept of modern workplace transformation. And my special guest for this chat is Microsoft Technical Fellow Jeffrey Snover, who these days also is CTO of Modern Workplace Transformation. And as many of our IT Pro listeners and readers know, also the father of PowerShell. Hi, Jeffrey, and thank you so much for doing this chat with me.
Howdy, Mary Jo. Great to be talking to you again.
Agree. It's been too long. So we have a bunch of questions that our readers and listeners posted to Twitter. So we're going to get right into it. And I think a great place to start is talking about what is modern workplace in quotes, and how does Microsoft want us all to transform to this modern workplace?
Yeah, so my team is called the Modern Workplace Transformation Team. And okay. So what we have two primary focal points, two or three. Basically, one is analytics and insights. So this is how can we take a look at what you're doing to provide you insights so that you can be healthier, more productive, and more engaged and effective in doing your job. The second is we have all these great assets that largely have been used by information workers. And how can we take those assets and tune them and fill in the needs for vertical industries and first line workers?
Nice. Okay. That's a great explanation. Nice and succinct. I actually had the fortune of watching a talk that you gave this year where you talked a little bit about this whole modern workplace concept. And I really loved how you described it there, because you said there are three pillars of this. And one is information and people at your fingertips, health and productive people and organizations, like you were talking about with insights and wellness, and effective businesses. So if you were doing an elevator pitch, or I was trying to do one, what would you say based on those three pillars is kind of like the crux of modern workplace from a technology perspective?
From a technology perspective, well, certainly there's, I'd say, sort of two things. First, of course, is the substrate, right?
Right.
The substrate, for people that aren't familiar with it, is what I call a planetary scale NoSQL data system. It's really much more than a database, right? It's a data system. And in that, all of the things you do in the cloud, all your emails, your chats, your meetings, transcripts of those meetings, they either reside in the substrate or they reside somewhere else. And then a digital twin is put in that substrate. Now, once it's in the substrate, then you get common search. It's the area where we do artificial intelligence to look for trends, to help you accelerate and advance your objectives. So that's one area. The second, I would say, is when we go and take a look at the needs of vertical industries, and so think healthcare, finance, retail, manufacturing, government, et cetera, what we see is that the big opportunity is to merge and coordinate our systems of engagement, think Teams, email, SMS, things like that, with our systems of record, think Dynamics and M365, to combine these into an effective workflow for a particular industry.
Okay. And I would assume there are like a set of building blocks or patterns and practices, as we used to call them, that can be reused to some extent across industries?
Yes, as part of this? Exactly correct. Yeah, think of approvals. It turns out that that's something our team initiated. And so now within a chat, you can just ask for an approval. And it's a quick thing, goes to the designated person. They can see the results, say, yes, I approve or I don't approve. That then gets recorded. You have a list of things. And that facilitates a workflow. Another example would be scheduling. a lot of businesses, you schedule things. You schedule things for an appointment with, say, a loan manager, or you want to set up an appointment with a doctor. You need to have bookings. Mm-hmm. And so that's a building block that crosses vertical industries.
Okay. That's good to know. What about the graph, the Microsoft graph? Like, where does that fit in all things here?
Yeah. So the graph is the API. So basically, you have the substrate, which is the store of, you know, the state store for all your state. And then you have a set of services that then either provide services directly or provide access to the substrate. And then those two things are then available through two heads. First, legacy heads, existing protocols that have, you know, been around for decades, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then MS Graph. MS Graph is the coherent namespace and access point to access all of it. And so that's the coherent namespace to access everything. Now, the neat thing about the graph is it's not just that you can get to an element in the graph, but that it is a graph, which is to say it's not just a lookup in a database, but you can look up an entity and use it to traverse two related entities. So imagine you look up a person. You know, if you're an M365 user, the easiest way to see this is the people card. Mm-hmm. And so go to office.com. By the way, not enough people know about or use office.com.
I agree. I cannot say that enough. I talk about it a lot on podcasts and people are like, what is that?
I know. And OWA, remember, I don't know about you. I'm going to speak a little out of school here. Like, I used OWA like years ago and I decided, no, this is not for me. No. And then when I took over this new role in Office, it's like, hey, I really need to learn the tools. I started using OWA. It's like, oh my heavens, this is not at all the thing I used years and years ago. Yeah. And just this morning, now I'm in dog food, right? So I always get nightly builds. But just yesterday, I went to use OWA and I did something. It's like, oh my heavens, this is amazing new feature.
And so I know a lot of the new stuff shows up first on the web, which is so counterintuitive to old school people like me who expect it to be in the Windows version first.
Exactly. Anyway, so Office is just glorious. And so go to office.com and search one of your colleagues and take a look at what's called the people card. Click on their name, you'll get this people card, and it'll tell you about their contact information. But then there's a tab that's files, and you can see the files that they've been working on. Now, just to be clear, of course, security and privacy is paramount. So you only see the files that you have access to. So Mary Jo, if you were working for Microsoft and we both went and looked at someone else's people card, when we went to the tabs page, we might see different things. I might see different set of files than you see because of permissions. But anyway, so you can go to navigate to the files they've worked on, to email communications you've had with them. So the graph, again, allows you access to everything, but then it also allows you to find something and traverse to its related entities. That's what's so exciting about the graph.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, back to your point about not enough people knowing about office.com, I also feel like not enough people understand the potential of unified search across Bing, Windows, and Office 365. I think that's gigantic and huge. And I'm like, how do more people not know that's a thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it is one of those areas that has been, you know, here's my model. In general, people's hair's on fire. And right. The last thing they want to do is spend time saying, oh, what's new in my tools? So it's incumbent upon us to make that experience ubiquitous, you know, fit it into their workflows, provide them little nudges to say, hey, did you try this? That's when I used OWA yesterday. I went to click on something and there was this little nudge like, do this if you want that. I won't say the details. And it's like, what? What's that? And I tried it. It's like, oh my heavens, this is glorious. And if it had been up to me, I wouldn't have said, okay, now it's time to go spend an hour learning what's new in OWA. So one of the challenges is, as a service, we are constantly updating the service, making it better, et cetera. And one of the challenges we have is how do we inform people about those changes in a way that's natural and not naggy. That's why I love, I don't know if you've seen these, sometimes there'll be a little, you know, click here to see what's new, and there'll be like a 2-minute video I love those.
I like those too, because so there's so many new features every week for Teams, Microsoft 365. You can't keep up, even if it's your whole job. And just to have somebody say, oh, look what you can do now that you couldn't do last week. It's so helpful to me.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, what you find is that kind of step by step, all of a sudden, the things that you used to do that would take, you know, 5 steps, now all of a sudden take 4 steps. And then all of a sudden they take 3 steps. And all of a sudden, like, oh, hey, you know what? Things just seem to flow a little nicer. And that thing I've mentioned in my talk about how, you know, that vision of information at your fingertips, to me at least, it was always, well, always 1 inch away from the information I wanted was always 1 inch away. Well, yep. Now more often it's really just there.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I have one more random question for myself, and then I'm going to launch into a whole bunch of reader questions and listener questions. So I kept seeing references to something that Microsoft has called the Modern Collaboration Architecture Framework, MOCA.
Uh-huh.
Is that connected in any way to what you're doing with modern workplace transformation, or is that something else?
Well, it's not in my team, so I don't know that much about MOCA. But here's the way to think about it. And this is actually really exciting because I know a little bit and a little enough to get dangerous. So if I get something wrong, I get it wrong. But here's the thing. In the past, we had, you know, these product silos, right? You had a product and it had its data, and that was a silo and it was locked in. And then you had another one and another one and another one. And yeah, we integrated them with a cardboard box, but you know, they were really these silos. And once all of a sudden you say, hey, the back end of those products, the information is in the substrate, and there's a uniform way to access any of those artifacts, the entities, or the features, the functions through the graph, then all of a sudden it opens you up to breaking those silos and having new organizations of work. Mm. And if you think about it, that's really what Teams is, right? Teams is, it certainly has new functionality, but a lot of it is existing functionality repackaged in a different context. Mm-hmm. A context, you know, Teams, I think of it as it creates a context for a small group of people, a team, to come together to do work. Mm-hmm. And so it's able to do that because we're breaking down the silos of things of the past. And MOCA, and by the way, so having done that, then that opens you up to a whole new set of organizations. And MOCA is just one of those.
Okay.
A new way to say, hey, here's an interesting way to organize things. And so I think what you're going to see is more of that, more first and third party ways to integrate these great capabilities that are tuned for the needs of specific users.
Mm, okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. Okay, reader questions. Brian Olson wanted to know, how does a modern workplace impact the activities of IT pros specifically, and what are the new skills that IT pros need to deliver it?
Brian, buddy, part of the tribe, man. You know, I spent my entire career on IT pros. And once again, you know, IT pros, it is a tough job, right? It is a job of constant change and constant learning. So if you're an old IT pro like myself, you remember the days where our number one tool in our toolkit was a bent paperclip. We would go around and we would push the pins in the dip switches of a CD-ROM reader, right? Because otherwise you couldn't get connected to the computer. And then plug and play came around, and we had to throw away a number of people thought, oh, this is the end for IT pros, right? Now people can just, like an arbitrary user can buy a CD-ROM and plug it into a computer and it works. What will we do? Mm-hmm. And the answer is we found new things to do. And so step by step, you know, one, I'm not making light of it at all. It is a tough job. It is a job that requires constant change. And indeed, we've been doing that for years. Software as a service is really a step function in change, right? So in the past, you know, a lot of the requirements or duties of an IT pro was about getting software from in the form of a CD-ROM and trying to get it to work, you know?
Yeah.
And that was really hard. Well, in what I call Microsoft V2, Microsoft is now taking responsibility for that. We're doing all that hard work. And there are still some IT responsibilities there, you know, making sure you have users, et cetera. But really the step function change is it frees us up to play this other very high value role for our companies. And that is to be the technology advisor for how to take this technology and drive the business forward. Not just, hey, I got the software running, and then I leave it up to others to figure out how, what they're going to do with it. Mm-hmm. It's now we have the opportunity to step in and say, hey, you know, this thing we're using for Teams, like where we're talking to one another, maybe we can use that to talk to our customers. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, wouldn't that be interesting, right? And maybe we can do this and use it to drive the business forward. So once again, it's one of those time to step up, and the role does change, but I think it's a very high value role and a very impactful role. Mm-hmm. And by the way, of course, there's still, of course, the, hey, how do I make sure my users are secure? How do I set the appropriate policies? How do I make sure we're getting the most from this technology? By the way, part of it is the, how do we make sure that everybody knows how to use this technology effectively? You know, how do I make sure that we are connected to the internet in a way that everyone's connected to the internet, so that there's not, nobody's being left behind because they've got inappropriate VPN settings, mm-hmm. things like that.
Okay, that's good. All right, another definitional question. This one is from Vishnu Nimagada. He would like to know whether modern workplace transformation is synonymous and has any overlap with the idea of working from home. And he also asked, how is it different from mobile first strategy? Is it just about collaboration tools like Teams, or is it more than that? So I guess people are still struggling a little bit with like how to define it and how to think about it in context with other paradigms that they know.
Yeah, that's a great question. Vishnu, thanks for that question. So when I talk about my team, Modern Workplace Transformation, maybe we've licked too big of a cookie. Because indeed, modern work, there are these bigger trends. And we're a part of those bigger trends, but we're not leading all those. So certainly, modern work, you know, we've seen in this pandemic, dramatic transformations in work. I will tell you that these transformations were in the cards anyway, and really we've just accelerated them. And people have been forced into this new world. And it is a world where people can be effective working anywhere. Let me make this personal. So, you know, Mary Jo, as you know, we've talked about it many times. I'm from New England. You know, Paul is from New England.
Me too.
There yep. you go. And often but I'm a senior individual contributor at Microsoft, right? And long, you know, so all my friends and family are in New England and I'm out here in Seattle. And for the last 20 years, I've thought, oh, I would love to move back to New England, but can I be effective as a senior contributor in that role? And I don't know that I could be. Well, guess what? For the last, since March, I have been effectively working remotely, even though I'm still here in Woodinville, Washington, but I've been working remotely. And it turns out I have been able to be effective. So now all of a sudden, I know that I've got the freedom to, I can work from anywhere. Now, change was required, change on my part, change on the tools, change in the workflow that we do as a company. But indeed, that is taking place. So modern workplace, back to what you said, is it remote work? I think of it a little bit differently. I think of it as modern work enables people to be effective using whatever style makes sense for them. Whether that is, hey, let's get together and meet personally in front of a whiteboard, or whether it's let's have the same meeting over a virtual whiteboard at whatever time zone makes sense. Whether it's, hey, let's have synchronous communications or asynchronous communications or a mix of those things. So it's empowering people to be effective, whatever style of work they want to have and across whatever device, right? I will tell you that I personally love my big monster monitors. I just love them. But a number of people have phones, and you can be effective on a phone or a a big monitor, and they're different modalities, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the features you've seen, I think we're public with this, is the read your emails.
Right.
So if you're in a car, you know, obviously you don't have a 32-inch monitor. And if you want to do some emails during your commute, we now have a mechanism by which we say, hey, read my emails, and they'll read them to you and you can respond. So it really is this helping you be effective however you want to be. Mm-hmm. Big screen, small screen, Macintosh, PC, Chromebook, browser, you know, whatever, you know, synchronous communications, asynchronous communications. The world is messy. The world always has been messy. The world always will be messy. The change has been us. Mm-hmm. We are now, in the past, we'd say, yes, to be effective, you buy a PC, it's this, you know, here's the screen resolution. That's the only thing we're supporting. You do this, and we've got a greased groove for you. Mm-hmm. And now you are the center of the universe. And that world, guess what? We were the center of the universe. You change for us, and you can be effective. Now we are putting you at the center of the universe. How do you want to be effective? And we respond to that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I see Microsoft talk a lot about people centric, and that's one of those terms your eyes kind of go like, glaze over. Sure. But I feel like people centric actually means something concrete in terms of strategy.
I would even kind of step back one, go up a little bit higher level and talk about Satya. I will tell you, I just love this guy. I think he is just the right person, the right leader for the right time. And I will tell you, right, I get invited to the closed door meetings, the SLT meetings, where we close the door and we have the confidential conversations. And every decision he does, every initiative first starts with humanity. And it's a real thing. It's not a PR thing. It's not a marketing thing. It is the real thing. Everything starts and founded in humanity. He says, hey, you, our company, we are here to serve our fellow man and our society. We do so by finding profitable solutions to our most important problems. So don't be confused. We're a business here, but our business is to serve humanity. And guess what? You say that enough times, people start to get it. People start to say, hey, actually, we should be doing this, and we should be doing that, and we should be doing this. And you're seeing that reflect, that kind of grounding in humanity, grounding in service, showing up in the products. And I think it's wonderful. I mean, it's inspirational.
It's definitely a different Microsoft than when you and I first started. You working there, me covering it.
Yes, exactly. It has not always been our path.
Another kind of definitional question I've got here from Jason Ferguson, who asked about the role of virtualization in modern workplace, especially going into the future. He wanted to know, is virtualization of apps and services a key piece of modern workplace strategy? And if so, how does it figure in?
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly, it'll be one of the plays in the playbook. So imagine the case of, there's so many use cases for it, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to say, hey, I want to have a virtual desktop in the cloud. Then it empowers you to do a couple things. One is it enables you to say, oh, okay, so now all of a sudden I can have a very lightweight machine here. All it has to do is to drive the display and a keyboard, and then I can have as powerful a machine as I want in the cloud. And I can say, hey, this month I've got this class machine, but now I've got a contract for this, you know, this contract that I'm working on requires a GPU. Oh, give me a GPU. Oh, that contract had ended. Go back to the cheaper, less expensive machine. Hey, at the end of the day, turn that machine off and save some money. So it gives you more flexibility there. In the end, I think you're also going to see there are various security scenarios where that makes sense, where you'll say, hey, I would like to log into a virtual environment that's very locked down, either for administration purposes or for code development purposes. And that environment's very tightly controlled. And I do so using RDP from an environment that's less tightly controlled. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's definitely, I would not say it is the pillar, but it is definitely a pillar in that.
Okay. A couple more theoretical questions for you. Martina Grom, who's a Microsoft MVP and one of my former chat guests here, asked what your opinion would be about the biggest challenges for a modern workplace.
Great question, Maria. What was the name again, Maria?
Martina.
Grom. Sorry about that, Martina. Yeah, that's a great question. What are the biggest challenges? Well, I'd say this. You know, I talk about Microsoft V1, V2, V3, right? Where Microsoft V1, these are like huge changes in the gestalt of the company. Microsoft V1, we are focused in on products, right? You got some code, compile the code, burn it on a CD-ROM, ship it in the mail, and success, right? Now, at the other end of the mail, people may have been struggling or successful, but we took responsibility for the product. Microsoft V2 was really a dramatic shift where we said, hey, we're going to take responsibility for the software running. We're going to deliver it as a service. We don't burn it on a CD-ROM. Now we'll install it. We'll configure it. We'll secure it. We'll make sure it's available. We'll make sure it's performant. We'll make sure it's backed up. We took responsibility for that. And really, I see the modern workplace transformation as this, the leader of an initiative of Microsoft V3. And that's my forming, by the way. That's not an official thing. That's the way I think about it. And that Microsoft V3 is where we take responsibility for outcomes, that you're actually being successful with the product. And in that is a whole new set of challenges. What does it mean to be successful? How do I measure things? I had a conversation with my boss the other day. I said, hey, I don't think we're using the right metrics. Because what I think we want to do is we want to figure out what our customers' metrics are, and those should be our metrics. Their success should be our success, and that's what we should be measuring. So how do we align those things? Additionally, I'll say one of the big challenges is how do we bring artificial intelligence to enhance people without it being, you know, how do we use it and harness it for good versus for not good? Right? Mm-hmm. How do we do so in a way that it you look at it and you say, oh, what a welcome friend versus a creepy visitor. Okay. we are absolutely committed to that, right? We're absolutely committed that the goal of AI is to enhance individuals and organizations. Our customers are never the product. They're not our product. We never sell our customers' information, et cetera. So how do we do that and do it in a way that we can go fast and make sure we never get it wrong? Those are hard problems.
Yeah, for sure they are.
But by the way, so one of the examples here is facial recognition.
Right.
This is one can be used for great good and great harm. And Brad Smith, top of the company, drilled into this and said, hey, what's the right position to take? And we realized that we were not in a position to take the right position, that really what it was required was a societal answer to that question. It wasn't enough for Microsoft to have an answer. The society have to have an answer. And so we've been pushing for the government to hold a conversation on this, so that we can achieve a consensus as to what the right thing to do is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think we're going to have a number of things like that.
I do too. And you're not the only tech company who will. And I won't call names out, but some others are having some issues around that right now.
Well, and again, the difference is we focus in on, AI, a lot of AI is about understanding a person to achieve an objective. Mm-hmm. And this is where I love Microsoft's position. Our head and our heart are clear on this. We want to use AI. We want to understand you why, to help you achieve your objectives. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's pretty noble. Right.
That's good. Final question from Tom Arbuthnot, also another Microsoft MVP. He asked, will Jeffrey Snover write a modern workplace transformation manifesto? The last one worked out pretty well.
Yes, Tom. Tom's referring to the Monad manifesto.
Yep.
And indeed, I thought about that. This framing of Microsoft V3 is a a new framing. It's a framing I came up with. And as I talk to people, it does two things. One is it resonates. Mm-hmm. It puts work in a context that they understand and say, oh, I now see it differently. And it allows them to take a set of actions that do not need to be coordinated, and those actions are going to add up. And so I think it might be worthwhile writing that manifesto. So watch that space, maybe. Ooh, by the way, nice. In general, when you write these manifestos, it's an internal document until it's successful. And if it fails, it never sees the light of day. If it's successful, we publish it.
You know, if you want to share it, we're always here to help.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Anyway, Jeffrey, we're out of time, but I would like to say thank you so much for doing this chat. It's our big finale for 2020, and I know you're really busy right now, so thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you, Mary Jo. It's such a pleasure talking to you.
Great. And for everyone else listening right now or reading the transcript of this chat, I will be putting up more information soon on Petri about who my next guest is going to be in 2021. And once you see that, you can submit questions directly on Twitter for that guest, if you would like, using the hashtag MJFChat. And in the meantime, if you know of anyone else or even yourself who might make a good guest for one of these MJF chats, please do not hesitate to drop me a note. Thank you very much. And we're done.
Yay. That was such fun.
That was great. That you know, just hearing people articulate what this all is, it makes it seem less like a sales pitch and more like a real thing that you're trying to have people build and understand. So thank you for helping with that.
I'm so glad. That is one of my goals, right? Sometimes you hear these things and they sound good, but like, what does it really mean?
Right.
And there's two things there. One is to go down and then to go up. Go down. Here's what the technology's really doing, but then go up. That thing about Satya, I'm telling you, behind closed doors, he's even more hardcore about, you know, hey, you need to make our customers successful. You know, if you're not making them successful, you know, what are you doing here? Like, mm-hmm. And he said it, I think he's been public about this one. He says, hey, if you want to be cool, don't come to be work at Microsoft. If you want to make other people cool, come to work here. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so great.
I know. I like that saying. It keeps people humble, but also gives you something to work towards, right? So.
Well, and you know, I don't know about you, but I believe that this Chicago School of Economic Theory that said the only goal of a company is to maximize shareholder value. I think that's one of the most evil, most pernicious thoughts that's hurt society so much. Yeah. And Satya's mindset of service is so important. It's not, you know, it's service. You're using capitalism to serve mankind, mm-hmm. I think is the key formula. Mm-hmm. So it's not an either or, it's an and.
Right.
So I think when we look back, you know, decades from now, we look back, we will see him as a transformative leader.
I agree. I wish I could get more time with him. He's a busy guy, but yeah.
You think?
I've gotten to interview him a few times before he became CEO and once since, and it's been really fun and interesting. So hopefully more in the future.
Okay. Cheers.
All right. Take care, Jeffrey. Have a nice holiday. Thanks, everybody, for the help.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.